nobody ever comes out.
You're all a bunch of slaves!
Radio freedomslips.com. It's Monday evening, Eastern Time, 8 p.m. that is, and it is time for the Fenton Perspective with Lori and Fenton.
Well, welcome everybody to the Fenton Perspective here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. I'm your host, Lorian Fenton, and I just want to say hi to everybody out there, and I want to thank all of my good followers and friends for listening in this last weekend when I was talking to Nighthawk, and I was on the whole agenda radio show at the end on Friday night and into Saturday morning. We had a great roundtable discussion. And, you know, that's what I wanted to talk to everyone about tonight was, you know, I realized after been on the station since August, and I have been involved with probably 5, 6, 7, 8 amazing roundtables in the middle of the night. And I know you guys are all aware of it here that are the regular listeners, but for those of you who are just tuning in for the first time or have just caught up with Revolution Radio, it's come across your airwaves, a friend turned you on to it. I don't know how you got here, but you're here today. I wanted to talk just briefly about our roundtables that go on in the middle of the night. They are absolutely amazing. There are some nights that I don't know what happens. It's like magic and amazing things happen. I remember one evening, I think it was 6 or 8 hours of Andrew Bashago, Alfred Weber, Bernie Mendez got on there and talked about the Mars Project and Project Pegasus and Barack Obama. I mean, it just went on and on and on. And it was like, it was a good 6 to 8 hours, I believe. And one evening, I was on with Michael Hemmingson. It was really odd. Nobody picked up the server. Nobody was there to host. So Michael just got on there and he called me and we started talking about super soldiers. So it was about 2 hours of my personal experiences with the super soldier projects and my involvement of putting on the super soldier summit and all the things that went on. And you know what, you guys, these are not recorded. So I think, just to let you know, this is a very special thing. And I was talking to Nighthawk about it the other night on air. And personally, you guys really need to tune into these roundtables because they are phenomenal. They have amazing information. Now, I got to say, some nights it's just kind of buffoonery. And we all have a good time. And we're laughing and telling jokes. And it's kind of like, you know, a free-for-all. But there are nights some amazing things happen, some things revealed that people never reveal on their own shows as far as hosts go. I remember one evening where a hijacker got on and I started asking him about his experiences with aliens. And he told this amazing story. And I'm not going to repeat it now because it's way too long, but maybe some night we'll get him to do it on his own show. But I mean, it was in the middle of the night. It's not in the archives. You'll never hear it again unless he decides to tell it. So, you know, you guys, you really got to listen to these roundtables because I'll tell you, some amazing stuff has come in. And also, our guests are starting to find out about our roundtables and they're calling in the middle of the night. So we get some really, really interesting evenings going on around here. So I just wanted to remind you, if you haven't listened to a roundtable in the middle of the night, or if you have a recording device on your computer that can record audio, I would highly recommend doing that and then catch up on it maybe the next day. And so lots of fun, lots of action. So check out the roundtables. They are really exciting. And I just wanted to put that out there for everybody to just chew on a bit in their mind. So there you go. The other thing I wanted to talk about was why I haven't been telling you guys my stories lately. It's been a crazy, crazy month for me. And as you all know, I was up in Grants Pass, Oregon, and the most amazing person in the world, Dr. Richard Allen Miller, hosted me at his home for a whole week. I was only supposed to go up there for 2 or 3 days. I ended up staying there 7. We had a wonderful time. We got a lot of work done. I discovered a lot of things about Dr. Miller that I was just, you guys, I'm in total awe of the man. I've never met anybody like him. He has done things that, you know, most people just dream about or make up stories that they did. I know this guy did them for real. And it was absolutely phenomenal. And I'm going to be having him on about every 3 months on my show just to talk about new and exciting things that he can slowly start disseminating, you know, through the airwaves about his experiences in the past. But the most amazing thing I found out about him was that he is a farmer. And he's not just any farmer. This guy has built, I don't even know where to start. He has designed all the farming industry that creates spices for things like Stash Tea. Companies like Stash Tea and other tea companies. He was one of the people that helped Starbucks get going. It's just an amazing story. The guy has stuff that will blow you guys' mind. So, yeah, that's what I'm going to do. About once every 3 or 4 months, I'm going to bring him on for a show just about either farming or UFOs or, you know, whatever else is going on. So there you have it. Just thought I'd throw that in. Oh, and back to why I haven't been telling you guys my story is because I'm not sure if I'm repeating myself. So what I've got to do is I've got to go back into the archives over the next couple of weeks, and I've got to listen to all the stories that I've told you. I've got to start making note of them. Then I will have new stories for you, I promise. It's just that I don't want to keep repeating myself because I think I repeated one the last time. So don't want to keep doing that to you. So there you go. So that's that. And, you know, I have an amazing guest tonight. I hope you guys are all ready for this. I have Stan Deo here with me, and I'm just going to read a little bit about his bio, and then we'll bring him on. It says, Stan Deo has held above top secret security clearance and worked undercover for the FBI. He was part of an exclusive black project headed by Dr. Edward Teller, specializing in the development of flying saucer technology. Stan's diverse background encompasses computer programming and mainframes in 7 languages, PC and Macintosh. He's a senior systems analyst, a research physicist, both formally and self-educated. That's cool. Marine architect, self-educated. That's wonderful. Advanced propulsion engineer for marine, air, and spacecraft. Author of 3 books and 6 scientific papers. Partner in Deo Enterprises, LLC. It's an R&D website hosting, book publishing, and book distribution company for 35 years. He's an amateur archaeologist in the Middle East. TV documentary television host for several shows on Tesla and a series of 3 highly rated shows on Channel 9 in Perth. UFOs Are Here, UFOs Deo and You, and UFOs Are Back. University lecturer in 3D computer animation and graphic arts. He's a biblical student, a public lecturer on world events, including the coming global economic collapse, developing solar-related crises in the Earth's climate, the UFO deception and its real intent, suppression of badly needed technologies, the coming destruction of America by civil war followed by foreign invasion, high voltage physics of cheaper energy. Well, I'm not going to keep reading here because it just goes on and on. It just basically says that he was born in Texas to pioneers of the American pioneers. And I, you know, there's just so much here. I'm not even going to go into it. Stan, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Sorry. If you live long enough, you get to have a long bio. Hey.
Oh my God. You know, this is amazing because I have so many questions for you. And the funny part is they encompass only the first little top part of your bio here. So I don't know if we'll get into the rest of it today, but I'm certain we'll have you back on again at some other time to get into the rest of this. But anyhow, so how are you doing today?
Oh, good. That's you know, great. Kind of enjoying a little bit of you know, respite from the normal work day, sort of. We're not having to wrap books today because we can't mail them out, but there you go.
Yeah, I found that out the hard way. I went all the way over to the post office and they were closed. I completely forgot it was a holiday. I've just been so busy. I didn't pay any attention. But anyhow, you know, Stan, I have so many questions for you. But the first one I want to ask you is, how did you and Holly meet?
How did we meet? Well, we were 12,000 miles or so apart. I was in Australia and she was in the States here in Colorado.
Okay.
And this is back in 95, 96 in that region. 95. She's giving me the high five here, 95. and I was a guest on the Coast to Coast AM show with Art Bell, the original host of the show.
Oh, yes. My favorite guy in the whole world.
He was a unique fella. You know, it's sad that he's gone, but I guess.
Well, you know, there's rumors, Stan, that he might be coming back.
Really?
Yes, really.
Tell me these rumors, and then I'll finish the story later.
Okay, well, if you're a follower on Facebook of Art, he has a couple Facebook pages, but I think the one that he actually posted on, he said that his 7-year contract of non-compete with George Norrie is over.
So it was a 7-year contract. Okay,
yes.
So once that's passed, then he can go in and compete for George's job?
Well, I think he can start his own show again.
Start his own show. Okay.
Yeah.
Gee, interesting. Well, that'll be something I'd listen to because, yeah. Anyway.
Yes, we all would be. Anyhow.
I met Art, you know, because he, by reference, some other people told him that I had a way to predict earthquakes. And so he got in touch with me and we made a long distance radio show about, you know, how I predicted earthquakes and, you know, what the accuracy of it was, et cetera, et cetera. And I did two or three more shows with him as time passed in 95. And there was a lot of people were listening and interested. And I got several hundred emails after the shows. One of the emails is from Holly here in Colorado. And I answered her questions, which were, you know, pretty basic questions about, you know, what fault lines are there in Colorado and what's the likely, you know, danger here for folks. And so I told her where to get information from the local USGS office and just the normal, you know, answer. And she wrote back again a few days later and thanked me. And I forget the details of it, but we started a conversation out of the hundreds of people that I guess it was because she had a bit of a sense of humor. And so I would respond likewise. And we exchanged emails, gosh, probably enough for, you know, 5 million words worth at some point, but it was a lot, you know, a lot of data back and forth and sharing experiences and interests. And we got introduced that way. And eventually she came down to Australia. She flew down to listen to one or two of my lectures. And then I flew up to California to meet her there. And we went up and down the San Andreas Fault and, you know, looked for volcanoes and things that would be of interest. And then I went back home, and eventually we decided that she should move down to Australia, and we would get married, which we did. And that's kind of the short story there, but it was a year or so in the making.
Oh, that's very interesting. So you guys met on the internet, basically. So we can call you an internet romance.
I guess you can, actually. I hadn't thought about it that way, but you know, there's if you want to look at the kind of photo story and a text description of our marriage, you can do that. We moved from Perth over to Victoria, Australia, which is the other side of the country down there.
Sure.
And a friend of mine owned a castle that he'd built over the years. It was about 20 acres under roof, but he said, why don't you guys get married here in our chapel inside the castle walls? So we got married in period costume, and, you know, it was really good. But anyway.
That's wonderful, Stan. You know, it's just so nice to hear these nice stories about everybody getting married. And, you know, the best part about it is you guys are still together, and it's been how many years now?
Well,
I caught you off guard, didn't I? I bet you Holly knows.
She does, but I was trying to figure out whether you meant like years married or years since we met each other. But years since we met each other would be from 1995 to now, which would be the latter part of 95, which would be about 18 years. But we didn't get married until she came down in 1998. So that's
we've been married. Being given.
Yeah, she's trying to create. She's not listening to your side of the conversation. She can't. But 15 years married and 18 years that we've known each other. So
that's wonderful. I'm so glad to hear that. And you know, I always start out my show trying to find a little more personal information about people. Do you guys have any pets?
We have four-legged family members.
Yes. Well, let's talk about those children of yours with four legs.
Well, we have two Australian Kelpie dogs, which are, you know, cattle dogs.
Sure.
Very busy ones. And they're approaching the two-year mark here. One of them's a young fellow named Jay's Beau, and the girl is mate is Isabella or Bella. And sometimes when she's noisy, we call her Bellicose.
That's great. Now, do you have actual sheep for them to herd?
No, we don't. We only have about an acre and a half where we are, a little bit over that now. They do have.
Oh, okay.
And they become bird herders. The flocks of birds come around to our trees and stuff, and so they chase them and bark, and the birds play with them, swoop them, and do all this kind of stuff. And so they enjoy it. And
That's great. That's their exercise. That's like their aerobic exercise.
No, that's
the
their fun. their aerobic exercise comes when Holly takes them for a walk down by the lake or up in the woods up next.
Oh, that's wonderful.
They run like crazy and chase rabbits, and you know.
Yeah. Yeah, they do as dogs do. That's wonderful. So that's great to hear that. Any cats?
No cats. Can't do the two of them together. No.
Okay. All righty. Well, that's interesting. And you don't have any children with Holly. Do you guys have any children from previous marriages? Or?
Well, I do, yeah. Let's see, five kids and about 14 or so grandchildren. I can't remember exactly anymore. They keep popping them out.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Look at this.
Great. So you guys have a very rich family life, I take it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't spend all your day sitting here just becoming, you know, doing all this, well, I want to call it doomsday predictions, but, you know, all the stuff that you guys are famous for, you don't spend all of your days doing that. I don't suppose you could, you know, survive mentally if you did that, right?
No, we do have ways to blow off a bit of steam, yes.
Yes, good job. All right. Hey, well, you know, my first other question for you is, do you know Ralph and Marcia Ring at all?
Where do they live?
They live in Paradise, California, near Chico.
No, I don't think I've met them.
Okay. Well, I would love for you to meet them. I'll get you hooked up with them sometime. Okay, moving on. Because if you did know him, I had a bunch of questions about it. Because he was the gentleman that worked with, what was his name? Oscar Carr or Otis Carr, who worked with Tesla, and he developed the flying saucers.
Right.
I think it was 59 or 60.
So this guy worked with Carr, but not with Tesla.
Correct. And okay. They developed some little flying saucers, or actually large flying saucers. And Ralph's story is that he was actually inside of one of the flying saucers and flew down the street. And then they thought, well, they were inside of the saucer, that nothing happened. They got out, realized that what Otis told them was that it's all in your mind. Your mind can't keep up with what just happened to you. So you don't even know it happened. But all the people that were observing you saw it. So they did do it. They just didn't have any recollection of it because their mind could not understand what they were actually doing. And anyhow, so I'm going to get you guys together. I think you'd have some interesting stories to tell each other. So,
all right.
Anyhow, back to your days of predicting earthquakes back in the Art Bell days. There's a gentleman in Sonoma, California, and for the life of me, I can't remember his name, but he has Syzygy.com, I believe is his website. And he's been predicting earthquakes through
Jim McCanning? Was it Jim McCanning?
Thank you. Yes. Now, how do you guys compare your earthquake predictions at the time? Were you guys both doing the same type of thing, or?
No, different. He uses a number of other techniques involving lunar phases and earth tides and things like that. But and a bit of electric theory for electric universe.
Okay, and so how were you doing your predictions, Stan?
Well, I had I was getting data from the naval facility in Monterey, California, at the FENMOC, and they were supplying sea surface temperature anomalies daily, twice a day at that time, which were very high resolution, the best you could get. And I took those images and was able to process 2 days worth for the changes in them, which allowed me to see two things. One was the change in voltage levels over fault lines that are about to erupt, and the other was changes in temperature as a result of those voltages flowing across the fault line from one side to the other. Because as a direct current voltage passes through some mediums, whether it be the dirt or the air or wire or whatever, it will take some of the heat with it and move it to the other end of the wire, in this case to the other side of the fault line. And basically what is happening is that when pressure builds up along most of the tectonic plate boundaries, there are crystalline structures, a lot of silicon dioxide, sand and stuff, quartz, that come under pressure, and they produce what's called a piezoelectric current, which helps to transport the heat signature. It's a very small signature, and it's no wonder people missed it before, but the technique I used did bring that out. And that was how I was doing it back in those days until 2006, when the Navy changed everything and classified everything, and it wasn't available anymore. And
right. So I remember when that happened. And you have not been able to find any way to measure that since then, because you can't get that particular data. Is that correct?
Well, not using their data. I've figured out another way to do it. And I've had to use a couple of the sources and put their data pools together. And having done that and made arrangements with these organizations, I think we're pretty good to be having access for the rest of time. But the way I've got it now is even more accurate than the one that the Navy, the data they were giving me. And so I can hit as high as 90% accuracy on hitting the major quakes now.
Wonderful. And where do we find that on your website, which is Stan, StanDeyo.com? Where do we find that, Stan, so we can take a look at it on a daily basis?
Well, that'd be a good idea.
What's going on.
Okay, you get the news and you get the earthquake forecast daily there. You just go to the website and you'll scroll down. Immediately you'll see a bunch of pictures of books and things that we have for sale. And then right underneath that, you'll see featured news for the day, whatever day it is, like February the 18th today. And to the right of that, you'll see Stan's daily quake forecast that Holly's put up there. And
wonderful.
A little miniature type icon that you can click on, and it takes you over to the archives and today's forecast and things like that. So that's how you can reach it there.
Great.
And I think
you'll
find the news.
I'm looking at that map right now, Stan.
Uh-huh.
And I see lots of red letters, hits map for previous week, explanation, blah, blah, blah. And I see those yellow and orange dots. Now, the yellow did happen and the orange ones didn't, or is that?
No, you're looking at, that was a summary I did. The last one was the 3rd of February. I just haven't been making any more, hit maps, because it just takes such a long time that I didn't put it as high priority. If you go down underneath that picture, on the left, you see where it says 2013 in black?
Oh, yes.
And you see where it says February the 18th?
Yes.
Click on that.
Oh, wonderful. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, is this exactly what happened, or is this what you predicted?
Well, this is today's forecast of what will happen between 1 and 10 days from now. If there's a bigger, if there's like a Richter 7 or 8 about to form, and I'm getting, the data on time, I will be able to sometimes as much as 10 days ahead of time forecast a major earthquake along those tectonic plate borders. And if you look at that image in front of you there, you'll see little very thin lines that are kind of purple and green in places that go all over the map. And those are the edges of the tectonic plates, the things where the earthquakes primarily occur. Now, I can't tell earthquake or forecast earthquake over land unless it's near a water body, like, you know, you can see in, you know, Eastern Europe, things like that.
Sure.
The data I have, they're not including the Great Lakes, so I can't do that. And when you look at this map, the red circles, the size of them really, it just kind of outlines the extent of the thermal and electrical anomaly that I've detected. And usually somewhere around the center of that, you know, but sometimes drifts a little bit toward the edge of the circle, there will be an earthquake with, you know, most of them occur within 2 to 4 days.
And some
and some of them just as I'm putting the map up, which is it's extraordinary. I remember with Art Bell one time I was doing a show. It was in the afternoon our time down there, nighttime for him up here. But we were sitting there, and he was asking questions like you are about how the earthquake predictions worked and what did I have on the forecast for the day. And I said, well, I've got Japan looks like it's going to get an earthquake here, probably in a, you know, Richter 4 or 5, something like that. And went on talking, and all of a sudden his producer, you know, chimes in, cuts in on the line, says, hey, guys, earthquake 4.5 to 5 just hit Japan, you know. And I'm thinking, well, okay, that's pretty quick.
That was like instant gratification, boy, I'll tell you.
Yeah, yeah.
That's but, great. It's not great that the earthquakes are happening, but it's great that you're able to predict them this well. Okay, so yeah. Everybody, this is where you need to go on a daily basis. You need to go to standeo.com, S-T-A-N-D-E-Y-O.com, and scroll down to the map of the earthquakes and then click on the day that, you know, it's supposed to be happening, or, if, you know, what is it, 7 to 10 days, you said, or
yeah, maximum 10, but not 2 weeks. No, you'll see it. Usually they're, I say the 1 to 7 days, you know, day one being when it goes up. But the big ones can go as long as 10 days. So.
Wonderful. Okay, so this is a good indicator of what's happening here. And I'm assuming, Stan, that all of these do happen? Or do you have a hit-miss database?
Well, I don't calculate them any longer. I did up until the 3rd of February, but of the earthquakes that were significant, you know, 5 or better, I got 90% of them and missed 10%. So,
that's an extraordinary track record. It really is. That's absolutely amazing. Okay.
Well, especially if it's not a long fault line. Sometimes I get signals that are in, you know, off the tectonic plate lines, and there shouldn't be any reason for an earthquake to happen there. I'll be able to determine from the signal that it is happening. But you know, this technique here showed something else to me here back in the middle to late part of January this year. There's something else happening that's causing the sea east of New Zealand to heat up and make a very regular and unusual pattern. And I've done a whole discussion of that in what's called show images.
Wow. Stan, we're going to have to talk about that right after the break. So stay with us, everyone. We'll be right back with Stan Deo.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message. Revolution, Revolution Radio.
You don't see it, do you? How close we are to absolute chaos. The sick ones are sitting on their fat asses, eating and drink themselves into a stupor, polluting the world without a second thought while it goes down the toilet. Nobody wants to do the nasty work. You know, the shit that we all just think about. Most good citizens are just along for the ride and then bitch and moan and complain about everything when it doesn't work out. Not me. Get it done.
Revolution Radio, where we do the nasty work. www.freedomslips.com.
tsunami of truth and revelation is sweeping our land and indeed the entire planet. Information is spreading like a wildfire and it cannot be tamed. It needs to annihilate the old paradigms that have kept humanity in a state of disempowerment and mental slavery for thousands of years. And that is exactly what is taking place right now. We are Humanity Transcending. Join me, your host, Siobhan Cerisi, on the Humanity Transcending Show every Saturday night from 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here. Radio, freedomslips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Fenton Perspective here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. I'm your host, Lorian Fenton, and I just want to thank you all for being with us here tonight with Stan Deo. And I also wanted to take a moment to say, please donate whenever you can. You know we're listener-supported here, and we want to keep being here for you. So I really hope that you will, you know, help support Revolution Radio at any opportunity you have. I know it's endless, the request for money from you, but we all try to remind you at least once a show that you are listening to us because of you, and we are all here because of you. Stan couldn't be on this show today if it wasn't for you out there, so I want to thank you for that, first of all, and then also say thank you for donating whatever you can, whenever you can. We really appreciate it, and so, you know, please donate whenever you've, you know, you're looking at your checkbook and going, boy, I got an extra $20. Instead of going to a movie, maybe throw it our way. We could sure use it. So thanks a lot for that. We really appreciate it. And also, tonight, after my show tonight, is A Mad Painter's Open Canvas show. And he has one of my other favorite people in the world, James Gilliland, will be on there from the East City Ranch up in Trout Lake, Washington. He'll be on tonight, so stay tuned for that as well. Well, Stan, are you still with us?
Yes, I am. I am.
Wonderful. Hey, you know, I don't want to change the subject too much, but you were just saying that there was some kind of water heating up anomaly down near Australia.
Well, near the northeastern portion of New Zealand, between there and about the halfway point between there and Chile.
Oh.
I was just doing the normal earthquake maps, and you can see, well, I've given a whole discussion on it on that show pages link that I sent you, where it goes to show images. It's Stan Deo, it stands Files Missile Shields, what it's called.
Okay.
And you'll see that right up at the top of the page there, where you can just click on a picture of the Earth with that kind of rainbow-colored donut. And there's an animation that goes with that once you get over to it. But here's what I found. Normally, I look for that Christmas tree light type page that you see there. And in that page, or that image, there are factors that produce different colors for changes, rapid changes in sea surface temperature, and also in current flow. And the thing is, if you look at the link I've supplied there for the 18th of January, there the anomaly is circled with a white circle, And what I saw lasted for nearly a week to 10 days from start to finish, and it didn't go anywhere. Now, normally weather, storms, that kind of stuff, you get a thermal electric signal like this, and it will drift with the prevailing weather. This didn't. It stayed in one spot, which is highly unusual. I've never seen anything like that. So I thought, right, okay, let's figure out what's causing that. Are any subsea volcanoes in the area? No, not that I could find. All right, known fault lines? No, not that I could find. Well, okay, and then suddenly it dawned on me. I wonder what is on the exact other side of the planet from this point. If you were to drive a stake through that anomaly that I'm seeing, through the center of the planet and out the other side, where would it come out? And I'll tell you why in a second. Because of some other interesting things about Tesla. I looked at this and I thought, right, okay. The other side is in Romania. Well, what's in Romania? So I started looking for U.S. presence in Romania, and immediately in the Google News search, it came up, United States signs agreement with Romanians to put in a U.S. NATO stroke missile shield. And I thought, I've heard that in the news, a missile shield base. That's what the Russians are all upset about. And that's exactly the other side of the planet from this. Well, now, Nikola Tesla, in the late 30s, proposed to the U.S. government, let me build you a transmitting tower that will set up a signal that will protect the entire United States from enemy aircraft coming in. And people thought, well, he means some kind of a death ray or something like that, but it was basically a field. And he wanted to put up a transmitter and send out these waves, electromagnetic waves, that would go all the way around the planet and meet themselves at the opposite end of the planet, at the antipodal point, meet and bounce back to the transmitter on the other side of the Earth where he was, and then he would add extra energy to it, and then double the energy would go out and meet themselves on the other side of the planet and bounce back. And he would keep adding energy to this ring going around the Earth and coming back at a certain altitude. You know, it's most dense at a certain altitude.
Sure,
now,
sure.
What he was proposing was that anything that moved over a certain speed and above a certain altitude flying through that field, it would cause electrical shorts through all the spark plugs in the old prop days. But nowadays, it would be in any of the electronics that is shorted like somebody burned it and bring the craft down.
That's fascinating.
Now, what is interesting is this base is not operational yet. It's not due to be operational till 2015. We're going to spend, the United States, at least $500 million to set up this base on an abandoned Air Force base in Devaselu, Romania. You can see pictures of it on Google Earth, and you can see pictures on our website here. What is interesting is Russia's, you know, adamant protest that they didn't want the U.S. to have a missile shield there. Well, gosh, there's no problem for Russia, really. All they were going to do there at that missile base, they said, was to defend the NATO alliance countries against a missile attack from Iran, which is, you know, southeast of there,
sure.
Not in Russia. Makes
yeah.
sense. Okay. Right. Well, here's the behind the scenes. There are 250 military army personnel to be assigned to that base, 250 U.S. Navy personnel to be assigned to a base that's landlocked. Now, the reason the Navy's being put in there in such great numbers is because they are the pioneers of using this Tesla transmitter-type technology to build up fields. They used to use it to communicate with submarines all over the planet.
That's right.
Yep, Pine Gap, the Northwest Cape in Australia, both of those were facilities like this. And there was another one in Guam. They're still there. You know, some of them are shut down. But that's why, you know, okay, the Navy was there. It will be there. Now, when the United States set up what's called Pine Gap in the early 60s, before they had ever, you know, broken ground, they put an antenna grounded and a helium balloon on top of the antenna to pull it up, you know, several hundred feet into the air, and they would fly a plane around this portable antenna trying to get the exact position they wanted there so the signal would go out and come back and would reinforce and build up this standing wave. Now, if the base at Devaselu is the same kind of transmitter, they're going to have to do that way ahead of 2015 to figure out where to site the pole, you know, the antenna, and the drive mechanisms for it. Why would Russia be upset about this? They would be more upset about that kind of electromagnetic shield than they would about missiles to shoot down you know, Iranian missiles coming in the direction of Europe. The reason is, when you set up this kind of a field, it doesn't stay just over the base. It goes out and all around the planet, reflects back, and builds up this huge umbrella all the way around the planet. Stronger at the antipodal point and at the transmitter, but still, anything that flies through it at a certain speed or above that, at a certain altitude or above that, its electronics will get fried. So Russia's not happy about that, but that's not what's being put in the press. That's what's happening.
Right, exactly.
Now, the other...
Stan, just to ask you a quick question about that. You know, the HAARP array up in Alaska, I'm sure you're very familiar with it. Is this anything like that, or are they using a completely different technology?
It's not completely different, but it is similar in that it's an electromagnetic field that they set up. And instead of going into the ionosphere, this can go into the atmosphere underneath and ricochet back and forth. What I was going to tell you is this. We're not the only ones doing this. Russia's done this at Riga, you know, years ago when they built their own transmitter and tested it. The Chinese have now started. And after this signal stopped in late January, I thought, well, okay, I'll wait and see if they do it again. Didn't see it. And then suddenly there's a long streak along a fault line further east on that Pacific area there coming up to Chile. And it stayed, and it stuck in the same kind of manner. It had the same kind of color and shape distribution. When I looked on the other side of the map there, that was in a very remote part of China, and it located itself on top of what is alleged to be a massive oil refinery in the middle of nowhere.
Now that's extremely intriguing.
Yes. Oh, boy. Something funny out there. But anyway.
That's absolutely fascinating. I had no idea that they were doing that now. I had assumed they were working on it. I did not know they were actually going into production. It sounds like they're working on it. It sounds like the Navy's, you know, got its hand in it as usual. And I'm surprised there's 500 jobs for that type of thing, though.
Well, yes, and $500 million worth for some little missiles. Now, think about this. Those missiles could intercept missiles coming at them from Iran, but missiles leaving Russia and heading for America, or you know, on either side, from Siberia or from the western side over Europe toward the United States, our missiles to catch them and be of any threat to the missile launches by Russia, if it was only missiles, they would have to go at excessive speeds to catch a missile that's already traveling hypersonic several times, catch up to it, and lock onto it and destroy it before it hits America. Now,
exactly.
I don't think we have anything that fast, that, you know, in the atmosphere. Well, allegedly, anyway. So that's what the strange part about Russia's protest is it's not really a threat to them unless it's going to interfere with some of their high-speed missiles and electronics, you know, above them.
Exactly, because it'll take out the whole guidance system and everything, and they'll just drop like a stone if they hit that.
Yep.
So. Oh, my God. Well, you know, that's scary into itself. Just think about it. If they were actually using this array to knock missiles out of the sky, then they'd just hit that wall and drop and kill everybody in Romania.
Well, it wouldn't. Well, no, I don't think it would drop in Romania. But, you know, they would drop when they launched to the short distance of the United States or some of its territories.
Well,
there's
exactly.
A lot going on. I mean, look, here's my big concern with this. We don't have a global government, you know, and we don't have a global economy, we don't have a global law and order that works for everyone equally. What this means is that if China has a Tesla-type transmitter or HAARP transmitters, which they do, and Russia does, the United States does, and maybe some other countries that we don't know about, when they're all playing with this kind of stuff, you don't just push a button and 10 seconds later, the field is there. It takes sometimes days to stoke up the field, to charge it up, to have an effect. And they, when all of them are playing at this and not in concert, they're against each other, it produces beat patterns between these fields that appear in places that nobody wanted them. And I suspect when we hear reports of loud booms, strange humming sounds from the earth, solid walls of nothing causing flocks of birds to fly into it and have, you know, crash damage to them and fall to the ground dead.
I was just going to ask you about that. Yes.
You see, there's a lot going on there.
There is. And, you know, how many years do you think they've been working on this technology, Stan?
Boy, that's a good question. Well, I know as early as 1963 in Australia, but before they went down there, they would have been testing it. So when Tesla died, his effects were taken over by the custodian of alien affairs, not aliens off the planet, but aliens in the United States. And there were papers that disappeared in the process of taking all his effects out of storage and putting them into that wire cage lockup. And I have talked to the FBI agent, the man the FBI hired, the professor, to go into the vault and look at the stuff they had taken from his place. And he didn't see, you know, like a super weapon documentation there. That was Dr. Donald Trump. But anyway, something went missing. And I had to eventually, years later, go over with the film crew to Belgrade in Yugoslavia. And we bribed a particular official, a lot of U.S. dollars, to let me into the room alone with Tesla's personal effects, you know, clothing, letters, photographs.
Right. Isn't that his cousin or nephew's museum that he has for Tesla over there?
Osaba Kasanovic. Yeah.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, he even signed my copy of the Tesla Colorado Springs notes for me. And we had a good relationship, still do, I guess. I just don't see him very often. And then there's Bill Trebejevich, Bill Turbo, with RCA Global, who was also his nephew and remembers eating, you know, a couple times with his dad and with cousin Nikki at an hotel. And he told me that Nikola, toward the latter days of his life, would only eat warm milk in a bowl instead of meats and other things. There was something wrong with his stomach. And I do think that he probably suffered, you know, radiation damage from all the high voltage stuff he played with through the years. It was sad, but that's...
That makes sense, doesn't it? Yeah. Yeah. I've wondered about that myself. Very interesting. You know, it sounds like you've gotten your hands on some very interesting information there. Now, what happens when all of the countries, Russia, United States, China, and, you know, Pakistan, you know, the whole bit, we all have these devices and they're all turned on and going throughout the planet. What's going to happen? Do you think they can intersect each other and be okay? Or do you think they're going to cause problems in the atmosphere?
They're going to cause problems, and they have been. I'm pretty sure of that already. The problem is, to stop this, to stop the weather modification processes and the warfare devices, defensive or offensive, we have to have a unified planetary government. My problem with it is that, based upon what we've done with countries and the United Nations, you know, is at the center of that, we could not trust anybody on the Earth to make a fair king of the world, or a fair, you know, president, whatever you want to call it. If we had a fair individual that would not make mistakes to control the planet, then yeah, the logical thing is, just like Roddenberry said in the Star Trek series, let's have a federation of planets where each planet is a whole entity and not a bunch of little sub-states. But that's not the case. That's just not the case right now.
Yes. That's so true. You know, my favorite book is still Childhood's End by Arthur C. Clarke. I wait for the day they park over us long enough that, you know, we forget that they weren't ever there. You know, and then come down and actually give us a little knowledge, you know.
Well, be careful what you ask for. This year may be the year you see that.
I wouldn't mind it at all if they would do that scenario. What I worry about, Stan, is that they're going to come out of the ships like in the V series and start trying to take us over and you know, killing us off that way.
Did you see read the books as well as watch the movies?
No, I didn't. I just read a lot of science fiction as a youth, so you know,
well,
that's where I'm stuck.
I still do as an adult, I have to admit, but the author of that, Ken Johnson, he used in the original movie a lot of biblical-based effects from these beings arriving and their eventual demise or being defeated and kicked off the earth. Are you familiar at all with the biblical prophecies?
A little bit. I was raised Catholic, Stan, and I'm recovering now. And
yeah, I hope you recover while you still got a church at the rate things are going in the Vatican over there. I wonder if that's going to...
You know, we could open up a whole can of worms, but let me ask you just quickly before we change subjects here. What do you think about the Pope stepping down?
There's more to that than meets the eye. I think that apparently there was some kind of an alleged investigation that the Italian government wanted to do into the holdings of the Vatican, and they wanted to overstep the treaties, the treaty that had been made between them. And he stepped down to avoid prosecution and involvement of the Italian government. Now, whether that's the end of the story or not, I don't know. But I do find it – sorry, go on.
I didn't think that the Italian government had any jurisdiction to do any kind of, investigation into the Vatican.
They don't, but that's the big issue. The pressure was brought to bear over, you know, the holdings, the use of the large assets the church has, and also the homosexuality and various other sexual misconduct that was going on throughout the world under the name, under the banner of Catholicism. And so,
sure.
They thought this was enough justification to dig into the Vatican. Now, it's not over yet, but I do find it very strange that on the day he announced he's stepping down, lightning strikes, St. Peter's Basilica.
Yes.
And that's just extraordinary timing. It's almost as extraordinary as, okay, here comes an asteroid. It's going to pass in near the Earth and underneath some of our satellites, but don't worry about it. Nothing's going to happen. And, coincidentally, one crashed into Russia and killed about 1,200 people at the same time. But it's not connected.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. yes. Well, I'm just going to trip back to the Pope here for a second. Now,
okay,
what I think was going on is I think that the Italian government is being persistent and kind of like, a flea would be on a dog at this point to the Vatican.
Yeah.
And I think they're getting worried that the United Nations or some other type of larger entities like Russia, United States, may all join forces with Italy and try to get the Vatican to come clean, kind of like what we're doing with the Federal Reserve here in the United States.
Right.
And that may be a problem because there's so many insurance companies and people that have been dealing with these claims against the Vatican, the Pope, the cardinals, the jurisdictions in the United States and in different countries, that it's a time that they get, accounting needs to be happening.
I
don't think it's as much looking to see how much money they actually have or what their holdings are. I think it is to settle out all these, pedophile charges and things like that.
Well, so. let me say I draw a line between the Catholics who are, majority of them very devout and believing Christians, and the Vatican. There's a line between those two. And I've said this and written about it for a number of years, a number of decades.
Yes, and I agree with you on that.
The Catholic Church, or the Vatican per se, did not form until an emperor or a Caesar says, okay, I'm going to make this the official religion. Mm-hmm. Now, that was at the beginning of the demise of the Roman Empire, both the eastern and western legs of it. So it apparently, Rome fell right around that time, and surprise, surprise, the structure of the Vatican was like a Roman imperial model where they sent out bishops to all the lands,
mm-hmm.
and they became the governors, in essence, behind the scenes, performing marriages and royal couples and that kind of stuff and advising, through the confessional, whatever. And so now we're about to see it revert, I think, and the Vatican is going to dissolve back into the political structure of Rome, and we will have a revived Roman Empire that has been hidden for, generations.
It could very easily be. I agree with you on that. Yep.
That's part of this whole power play, I think.
Yeah, it could be. And, there's one other possibility that I was contemplating this weekend. He may actually have Alzheimer's and he may not be able to function anymore. And instead of dying in bed, because, honestly, Stan, their egos are so big that I've never seen one of them not go to his, his deathbed, being the Pope, to give up was it palpacy or whatever it's called?
Papacy, yeah.
Papacy, yeah. I can't believe he'd even do this because their ego is so huge. I mean, I can't even imagine it. He'd have to be giving it up for an extraordinary reason. And them looking into the Catholic Church is one thing, or the Vatican is one thing, but he may actually have something like Alzheimer's where he won't even know his name in 6 months. you know.
Well, that may be the case. It certainly may be. But I guess you're familiar with the vision of St. Malachy, you know, about the 112 popes that would come.
No, I'm not. You'll have to tell me about that.
Oh, wow.
Well, we're going to start it, and we'll go here for a few more minutes, and then we're going to pick it up over the next break. But yes, please inform me of this.
Okay. The St. Malachy visited Rome. This is going back hundreds of years. And he had a vision while he was there about every pope that would be taking the control of the Vatican from his time until the last pope. And he gave each one of them a name and a little shield, a little phrase that said, this is the nature of this particular pope. And they have been right all through the 112 popes. They've been right up until today, when we have a pope resigning, and the next one, whoever takes his place, is the last pope that will lead the church astray, he'll betray the sheep, in essence.
Wow.
And he's going to be called, the Black Pope. That's part of his phrasing. We don't know what it means, physically black or some other thing, you know, about his taking power there will reflect black something or other, and people will refer to him as the Black Pope because of it. But he's going to be called Peter the Roman. Now, if you think about what I was just saying earlier.
Right.
Okay, you see what I'm saying? It's the power is now going back to the political civil structure, and in essence, in addition to being head of the Vatican, he's going to be the head of a political structure that's huge.
Wow, that's very intriguing. Yes. Oh, interesting. Well, you know, we have a break coming up here any second now, but I don't know where to go. I had so many questions for you. I have a question from the chat room for you, Stan, if we can get it in quickly here. It says, ask Stan if he's aware of the giant beneath the Vatican that they sacrificed a child to.
No, I'm not. I'm sorry. I don't know about that.
All right. And I don't know much about sacrificing under the Vatican myself, so. But there we are. There's the music. So we'll be right back, folks. This has been a very intriguing conversation with Stan Deo.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message. Every Tuesday afternoon on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, we present our goddess spiritual warrior, Kathy Bilski.
I command. I call to the architect of the universe's divine creators and ask for permission to quantum leap the world in all life forms on all planes and dimensions, seen and unseen, connected with planet Earth, to let us go beyond our known potential into the greatest unknown golden age the universes and worlds and all planets have ever experienced.
Kathy teaches the spiritual truth so that you may create a better life and be able to make positive changes for yourself and for the planet. She helps us remember that we are not powerless, but very creative spiritual beings having an Earth experience. Time to quantum leap into the age of divine enlightenment and let Kathy provide you with the tools of knowledge you need to awaken spiritually. That's the Quantum Leap Show. Let light unite every Tuesday from 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern Time on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
How dare you, sir? How dare you?
No, how dare you?
No, no, how dare you?
How dare you? No, no, my, how dare you?
You dare condemn me?
How dare you? How dare me when I how dare you? You big peepy head.
Hello, all. Thanks for tuning in to Revolution Radio. We are the number one public access, commercial-free internet talk radio station on the web, with between 12 and 16 hours of live programming per day, bringing you news, politics, entertainment, and just plain human interactive talks with our extremely informative and successful nightly open caller roundtables. And how do we do this? Through the support of volunteers and donations from good listeners like you. So if you're digging what you hear, and we are bringing you an entertaining and informative service, please visit our site support page and donate to the cause. Keep us live, keep us kicking, help us bring you the talk.
We are already here. Help keep us here. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. Revolution Radio!
Cows of pressure have to be naked! I can't stand it! I can't stand it!
There is no good and evil. There is only power, and those too weak to seek it.
This is the people's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it, then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Be sure to tune in weekdays 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time for Strange Universe with Sean David Morton. The strange, interesting, and engaging wide variety of topics. So be here. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com.
I would like, if I may, to take you on a strange journey.
Now you can share the topics that drive the discussions of your favorite talk shows with TalkStream Live's topic-driven talk radio. List and promote real-time talk radio topics, or post the topics that you want to hear. Hot topics are tweeted and retweeted, and include simple click-to-listen audio links. The future of talk radio is topic-driven talk radio. Available now at TalkStreamLive.com.
This is Steve Travesty from Project Red Beam. You're listening to Revolution Radio of freedomslips.com. And now we get back to your hosts, Laurie and Fenton, with the Fenton Perspective.
Well, hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Fenton Perspective here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. I want to thank everybody for being with us here tonight. And Stan Deo, my special guest, is with us this evening. He's telling us some very interesting facts. And I think I'm going to probe his mind a little more here. So, Stan, are you with us?
Will his probing hurt?
I hope not. It's going to hurt my brain, but I don't think it'll hurt yours.
Okay.
Oh, gosh. Well, you know, I was reading your bio, and, you know, we just finished up about the Pope. So are we done with that, or do we need to mention anything else to everybody out there?
Well, yeah, I think we're basically done with that that section of things that are
okay. So they can look that up where on your website? Did you? Oh, you put it in there, and I'm sure Tones, my producer extraordinaire of the evening or du jour, as we say, will put that in there. The Pope's of Saint Malachi, and I see that he says he will. Okay, wonderful. Thank you, Tones. Okay. Now, going to the coming global economic collapse. That is something that I've been wanting to talk to you about for a while now. And why don't you give us a quick synopsis of what you think is going to happen, or your predictions of what you think is going to happen over the next, like, you know, 2 to 5 years economically?
All right. Well, the world economy is in such disparity, and so many people are so poor that they don't have enough food and water every day to live happily, that something does have to be done to avoid things getting much worse and have, you know, civil disobedience and uprisings and revolutions. Now, I can see that, and I can see the need for a global economy to replace what we've got. We can go into the leadership of that and what the problems are likely to be, but we see right now that the world economy is rapidly being forced to, the economies of the world are rapidly being forced to form behind someone to set up a global digital electronic currency. Now, the U.S. dollar is weakening, it is devaluing, and it's going to accelerate now. Between now and the end of the year, I think it's going to go like a rocket. Produce that we're importing from various countries like Israel, Mexico, and other countries in South America that we eat on our food, you know, on the shelves of the food stores, the produce is going to have to go up because the U.S. dollar value drops, so we have to pay more dollars to buy the same food that we bought from these countries last week or earlier in this year. We're already seeing price rises due to drought, due to flooding in the United States, and the whole world, for that matter, is suffering extremes of weather of climate, actually climate change, where they're getting more rain and flooding where they never had it before, and where they're getting snow where they never had or didn't have very much of it, and where they've got drought. So these extremes are hitting the food production, which
sure
directly affects everyone in the pocketbook. And that's part one.
Okay, and before we go on to part two, I just want to say, are you promoting a one world currency and kind of like, and I'm going to say that gently, like a new world order system?
Yes, I am, but not run by mankind, run by the creator of mankind. But, you know,
okay. I just wanted to clear that up because it kind of sounded like, you know, the Bilderbergers were taking over your mind, Stan. I was getting worried for a second there.
No, I approach it that way on purpose to get people's ire up, and then I tell them, look, hey, but let's see who can run a fair government like that. There's only one being.
And, okay, great. Okay, and then part two now was?
Part two. Yes. Okay, increase in population is putting a heavier demand on these crops that people are after. And the financial institutions and all the chicanery that's going on behind the scenes, and you've seen the housing bubble burst, and you're now looking at manipulation of gold and silver in huge amounts, and countries like China and Russia are buying up tons and hundreds of tons of gold and silver to make ready for what's coming to replace the current world economy. And basically, the world economy is based on the U.S. dollar. They write energy and oil contracts in U.S. dollars, but that's changing rapidly now, and there's some intermediary currency treaties being done where the Chinese yuan becomes the dollar franca, if you wish, franca, and but this is all going to be temporary. What we're going to see is this chaos and horrible inflation. I mean, just where it takes a wheelbarrow full of dollars to buy a loaf of bread. And people are becoming unemployed in this country because of jobs being outsourced overseas to get out from under the heavy restrictions on small business and even larger corporations by the government and particularly the tax department. So all this is creating in our country, where I guess most of your listeners are, the problem where we don't have jobs. And, affecting the economy directly is the fact that we only have 75% of the workforce working. The other 25% are unemployed, even though they don't show on the current government register. They just stop looking for work.
That's
gone.
That's absolutely true. Yep.
And that's a major contributor to the economic chaos. It's going to, hit everyone eventually, because when the U.S. gets a sniffle, the rest of the world dies of the flu. It's a very integrated system, whether people believe it or not. And so this whole process is heading toward a global economy, which cries out for and almost demands a global government run by.
Right. Yeah. Well, you're bringing up 16 things I want to talk about right there. You're just saying that when we get a cold, the rest of the world gets the virus and dies. Well, that even works with outsourcing, and people don't realize that. Everybody complains that we've outsourced our jobs to India and Costa Rica and God knows where people are at. Mexico, my Comcast here in California, their offices shut down in Sacramento, and now they're down in Mexico. So, but what people don't realize, the more money we lose here is, unemployment. Let's say tomorrow I cancel my Comcast. That's not just a job, that's not just people here that actually put the hardwire the stuff in here physically. It's also taking a job away from somebody in Mexico too. So you're absolutely right about that. We're dying here on the vine in the US, but also we're taking those outsourced countries down with us too. Because they're losing jobs as fast as we're pulling out of things here as well. So now we're not just losing jobs in America, we're killing the rest of the world along with us.
Yeah. We're all closely integrated, whether people want to admit it or not. And the main factor that underlies all economies is the control of the flow of energy. That's true power, even in the physics and equations. When you let energy go from point A to point B over a period of time, that's called power. And it's political and real power when people control the flow of energy from the oil, gas, etc., nuclear, all that. That's real power. Now,
that's
what
right.
people people don't realize I worked for guys that were members of the Illuminati in the beginning, back in 71 to 73, when I was recruited by Teller's group. And so I got to hear things inside that give me a special view on this, and is this: most of the Illuminati are Western nations, not Asian, and not Islamic nations either. Now, right. what they've been doing on the Illuminati side, the Western Union, if you wish, is they have continued after the last crusade to the Middle East, where Saladin the Great kind of clobbered the Crusaders, kicked them out of Jerusalem. They have continued to fight this Crusades battle for the dominance of quote unquote Catholic Christianity over Islam. Now, to that end, they have been buying up the oil produced by the Islamic nations and burning it with gay abandon, while at the same time, we're capping off our oil wells all over the place in Australia and the North Sea and, you know, the United States. We've got oil in abundance, but we're burning up the Arab oil, mainly the Arab Muslim nations, so that they have nothing left to sell eventually, and they cannot be a strong economic force in the New World Order to come, because it's the control of the flow of energy that gives you the true power on the planet. Now, the Gulf War I and II, when you start burning oil wells in a major producer like that, you're accelerating the usage curve a great deal. You're burning up the stuff there. If you can't get it over and burn it up fast enough in the Western nation, you burn it up there. And then what did the World Bank, which is, you know, backed by the Illuminists, what did it do? It said to the Arab nations, gee, you've got all this money. Let's put it to work for you. Let's put it into developing nations in South America, whatever, and we'll bolster their economies, and you'll get paid your interest on it, and everything will be beautiful. You'll make more money. And, oh, okay, that's good, they said. Then, surprise, surprise, after they had poured a lot of the, you know, the oil money into the World Bank and then funding these developing countries, a lot of these countries started to have military overthrows and coups that did not recognize the contract and did not recognize the debt, and the Arabs lost all their money.
And, you know, those were all backed by our CIA buddies who are in bed with the Bilderbergs or the Illuminati. So there you go.
Yeah,
and,
you're right.
You know, I call it the 3,000-year war, you know, because they know whoever's behind all this trying to take down those Arab nations knows it's not going to be a battle won overnight. They're very patient. They've got thousands of years. If it takes hundreds of years, they're fine with that. As you know, they've got patience beyond, you know, they raise their kids to be the next generation of identical models of themselves. Their ideologies, everything that they believe is carried from generation to generation. Very few of those kids escape and have their own thoughts about how they'd like to run the world. So
that's true. That's true. And put yourself in the position of, let's say that you were appointed to be the leader of the New World Order, you know, the president or dictator, whatever you're going to call him.
Okay. Now,
you're going to try to solve the territorial dispute of thousands of years in the Middle East between the sons of Ishmael and the sons of Israel. Okay?
Okay.
Now, have you ever been to the Middle East?
No, I've never traveled beyond the west coast of the United States and New York and Chicago and a few other places like that, but nothing extensive, no.
All right. Well, having been there, let me tell you this. The guy or the person that we're talking about, you in this case, that is in charge of bringing peace to the world through the peace in the Middle East is going to have some very, very, very clever plan to unify these people that have been fighting for 3,000 or 4,000 years over territorial dispute, and they haven't slowed up a bit. Having been there and talked with both sides of the issue in Israel, I now understand the one thing they both understand over there, or respect, is power. If someone has the power to squash them like a bug, they will listen.
Exactly.
Now, that means that the new world leader is going to have something in the back room technologically that is just horrific, that is so far beyond what people could build themselves, that it's alien, that it's, you know, it's indefeatable. And that's
right.
How he's going to do it. He's going to put force to play. And probably even, I think from some of the prophecies I've read about what the Antichrist of this age will do, that's the world leader we're talking about, is that he will place something in the temple in Jerusalem, in the Jewish temple. He will place something that makes everything desolate. And they warn the people in the prophecy, they warn the people of Jerusalem, when you see this happen, don't even stop to gather clothes. Run and get out of town as fast as you can. Put some distance between you and Jerusalem. Now, I think what they're talking about is a nuclear device
right.
that the new world leader will put there, and he'll say, the first one of you guys that steps out of line with your Arab, Mormon, Christian, or whatever, I am going to set this off, and we will destroy all your holy places once for all. I won't have the problem anymore. And
yes.
you see how
that's, yeah.
that he's respecting forces, and that's control of power as well.
And Stan, I've also read that prophecy, and I believe that it's not just going to be there. I think they'll do the same thing in every capital of every country in the world and say, look, you know, if anybody gets out of line, I can destroy your whole nation in a heartbeat.
There are only going to be 10 nations in the world at that time, you realize.
Oh, now that's interesting. I didn't know about that. Can you explain?
Well, they're more like 10 regions. And on page 200 of my book, The Cosmic Conspiracy, I put in the map that I got from a document that was released from the Club of Rome. Meadows and some other people put it together back in the 70s with supercomputer models that they had at the time,
okay.
showing how to divide the world into 10 socioeconomic regions that had common destinies and common problems to solve. And these 10 regions, on the map here, you can see that America and Canada are one, South America, Mexico are another one, Russia and the territories around it is a big one, that's group 5. And I show you before that page the actual document that I got from them and the list by country, existing country now, and where they will be in the new 10 regions of the world. And this is not just some idle thing that somebody put a pen to paper in the Illuminati and said, well, mm-hmm. let's just make these 10 countries. That'll be easy to handle. That's not it. They did a lot of very serious modeling, mathematical modeling of demands, birth rates, religion, all kinds of stuff, to figure out the logical way to solve the planet. Now, I recently retranslated just 8 verses that I've put into the last edition, the final edition of The Cosmic Conspiracy, from the Book of Daniel. And I found something through, just fastidious translating. It mm-hmm. took me 3 months in my spare time to translate those 8 verses completely. Now, I found in there where the leader of the world, the dictator, the Antichrist of the world, will use technology given to him by, and I quote this exactly, by an alien god who will give him technology in return for lands and people. Now, he is going to give some of those 10 regions over to the control of the quote-unquote alien god. Now, this is Satan. This is a follow-on, and I find that in the verses I translated, and I show you how I got to it, and it's not magic or guessing, that this is what's going to happen. The countries that get given over to Satan as a reward by the Antichrist for the technology and the power to take over the planet and rule it, mm-hmm. those people are going to be subject to every whim and control of the fallen ones with their technology. Now, you talked about V in the beginning of the show.
Mm-hmm.
This is what I found in not only Daniel, but a reference from the Book of Enoch, where the lands that are taken over by the fallen ones, the alleged aliens, they're going to treat people as fodder, food. And if you look back on V, and the lizards were dressed like humans and friendly and all that, but they were really lizards or reptiles underneath, they ate people.
Oh,
and it's in the Book of Daniel, in those 8 verses, and I nearly fell off my chair the day that I finally realized that. It kept on getting worse the more I translated. So this whole alien thing is coming to play, and I think this year.
Well, Stan, it's interesting that you said that. I'm somewhat of a psychic. I don't talk about it too often, but I had a horrific dream many years ago about us being invaded, and they were, killing us and eating us. And I was, you know, the whole thing about to eat to serve man in that old, what was it?
Twilight Zone. Yeah,
Outer Limits, Twilight Zone, something like that. Boy, I'll tell you what, I woke up the next day and I thought, geez, that's exactly what's probably going to happen here. And, you know, I keep trying to tell myself I'm crazy and I'm imagining things, but I don't think so. I've always had that in the back of my head. And there have been a lot of people out there that talk about how amazing the aliens are and UFOs and, you know, all those people out, you know, those alien people out there, the Palladians. I mean, we can go on and on. And I sometimes think that we're getting fed, we're being brainwashed. We're being hypnotized. We're being
deceived.
Told lies. Yes. Exactly.
Well, that's what we were warned about in the Bible, that there will be a great deception at the end of these times, at the end of this age, that will fool many, even the very elect, if such were possible. Now, this is going to be beings like us, look like us, taller, probably more handsome, and they'll have a slight sheen to their skin from the scales instead of the normal skin tissue we have. And they will come posing as messengers of light, love, and harmony, and will even probably give us video or equivalent of that, even holographs, of the crucifixion of Jesus itself, and say to us, we were there, we created you in the Garden of Eden, and here, you know, was the Messiah being crucified on the cross. You can see it live here, and we're here, the same ones that were there 2,000 years ago. We're here now to help you. It's, you know, part of your evolutionary process. And with that kind of technology and that kind of power and those mile-diameter UFOs that are parked over cities like in V, people, you know, even engineers, you know, very educated people will be saying, wow, they're not from around here, you know. They're not any political party, any culture, any religion that we know about. These are, well, hey, they could destroy us, but if they're going to be our friends, where do we sign up? It's a great deception.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree with you on that. I've never felt comfortable. You know, and here's a great analogy, I think. I have one friend who goes to the aliens and she meets them, and it's like they show her Jesus Christ and God and the whole bit, and she says, I come back and I feel like I've been blessed by the Lord. Okay, another friend goes and she says, oh, I meet this guy and he's like the hunkiest guy I've ever met in my life, and we're madly in love, and I can't wait till they take me, because then I get to be with him on another dimension or wherever we go. And then, you know, they come back, and then I have other people that I listen to, like Woodley Strieber, who go and then they rape him, you know, and then they put him back. And I'm thinking to myself, well, something's going on here. Why are these women being, you know, who knows if it's just women, I'm sure it's men too, but are being bamboozled, hypnotized, and what have you, into thinking they're wonderful, and the same darn beings are abducting Woodley Strieber, and he's having a horrible experience.
Here's the answer.
Yeah.
Here's the answer. It's very plain. Satan reads the Bible, has read it, knows the whole plan there, and he is going to try to impersonate the Messiah. To do that, knowing that people have read the Bible in many languages and cultures, they are expecting bad, you know, demonic things to appear on the earth and for us to be saved by the real Messiah cleaning out those guys. So the little gray critters, the tall gray critters, are probably cyborgs built by Satan and you know, the human-looking occupants of the underground bases and whatever. Mm-hmm. And they have definitely put those out there to abduct and terrify people, to mutilate cattle and horses and livestock, etc. Oh, gosh, these are terrible. I'm frightened of them, that kind of stuff. And then ride in on their silver, white saucers or, you know, cigar-shaped whatevers and say, look, let us help you. Let's get rid of these creatures here. They're from a part of the universe that doesn't really belong here. Bang, they're gone. We're here. We're your friends. And it fulfills prophecy, allegedly, from the Bible, saying that he comes and, you know, delivers us.
Mm-hmm. That's intriguing. So do you think Satan is only one type of species that's out there and that there are many others? Or do you think he's the only, you know, ball game out there?
Well, you know, when you say, is he the only ball game out there, he's allegedly pretty much humanoid, but with reptilian DNA. And if you look at the revelation of John in the apocalyptic writings, they talk about the creatures that surround the throne of the Almighty Creator God, and those are not all human-looking. I mean, you're looking at winged beings and all kinds of things that are probably from other areas where he has planted life. So, no, he's not the only game out there. And in our portion of the universe, in our little thing here where it's all been happening, he's the guy we got to worry about.
Okay, I get it. That's very intriguing. Okay, so I am not a big, as you can tell, a big religious person having recovering from my Catholicism. I haven't found one out there yet that I'm hanging on to, but this is all very intriguing, Stan. So let me ask you this. In all these books that you've written that you were just talking about, I did see them on the main page. Is there a series that we should be reading about this and about when Satan is going to be here? And now, do you consider him an alien, or do you consider him a god or a being? Or, I mean, what do you consider him here?
The ancient cultures, you know, back in the time of Sumerians and the ancient Greeks and whatever, back in those days, seeing someone with this absolute power of life and death would call them a little g god. And there were a number of little g gods in the ancient days here. So okay, by that definition, yes, okay, he would be considered that.
Okay. Now, I just to go back to what I was saying here, now that I'm on the homepage again and I can see this, I see that you have a Watcher series here that it looks like there's 5 books in that.
Well, those are DVDs. I appear in 2 or 3 of them. Lynn Marzulli and his producer made this series, and as I say, we met with them and participated, or I did anyway, in a few of them. But I find that the series is of enough importance in interviews for people to share with that, and the same time with the other DVDs, The End Times, The Apocalypse, The End Times, that Patty Heron came over and interviewed me, and we did a portion of that. But the books, there's only 2 books that I figure are the most important books that, you know, Holly and I have written. She wrote the Dare to Prepare book, which is physical preparation for a number of threats that are on the horizon for mankind.
Okay.
And then there's a spiritual preparation explaining what has happened, why it's happened, and where we're headed. And that's the Cosmic Conspiracy. And that's the reason we sell those 2 in a, you know, very discounted price package, because the 2 go hand in hand, spiritual and physical preparation for what is coming. Because, Lorraine, you know, we're all going to die at some point in time. It's just a matter of doing well until that time that we have to pass.
Exactly.
And so we're going to meet our Creator one day, one way or another. So get prepared.
You know, what about the people? And this is something we could talk about when we get back from the break that's coming upon us here. Have you met your Creator already? Because I think I've already met him. I've died several times and come back. So I'm just wondering, have you ever had that experience?
I had a near-death experience, and I went out there and did a life review and, you know, curled up to keep on going, and the good Lord put me back in my body, and I find out, you know, years later that the reason was that he wanted me to write that book and to go and explain what I had seen and what I had deduced after that to as many people as I could. But
right,
believe me, I hate to write. I would rather experiment and build things, and, you know, but no, I had to write a book, and
Well, that's so okay. We need this book. This book looks very intriguing, folks. You go to standeo.com, and it's one of the first books in that list of books that you see there. It's the very first one on the top. And it's, yeah, you can order right there on the website, and there's the music. So we'll be right back with Stan Deo after the break.
Dance with the devil don't change, devil changes you.
I want it gone, history, leave nothing of it. This is a battle, a war, and the casualties could be your hearts and souls.
Consider this your personal invitation to join me, Seth Michael Dread Shoes, for the Psycho History program Sunday nights at midnight until 4 a.m. Monday morning. A roundtable discussion where we converse on many topics, the beauty and horror we all experience and observe along our varying paths. And for you night owls out there, those who enjoy your insomnia, be sure to join me on The Second Foundation Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday mornings, 4 a.m. to 7 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, where we discuss the inconsistencies in our history, the the subtle misconceptions that divide us and the actions of those that govern us. Remember, great ill is wrought by good men who do not. And I look forward to hearing your thoughts on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Rip! Rip! Tear! Rip it out! I want to hear nothing but ripping!
Revolution Radio. You're listening to Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, welcome back, everybody, to the Fenton Perspective here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. I'm your host, Lorian Fenton. And boy, that was a short break, guys. I was just getting ready to type a whole thing to Stan here, and I'm back. So here we go. And don't forget, after the top of the hour is Open Canvas with A Mad Painter, and his guest tonight is James Gilliland from the East Eddy Ranch. It's going to be a great show. And here we go. I'm going to bring Stan back in, and let's see what we got. We have a couple questions that I think that I'm not going to answer right now from Adele in Australia. She asked if Stan believes oil is abiotic. Well, we may ask him that. But the other one was if Stan had seen a video, and let's see if Stan said he'd see. Oh, he hasn't seen the Primer Field video, so that was answering willpower. And let's see, Adele in Australia. Stan did a lot of work on Australia. Does he feel there is a lot more going on than what is and can be perceived? I'm a little confused about that, Andre. Maybe you could clarify that a little better, and we'll ask Stan about that in a few minutes. So, anyhow, Stan, I wanted to – are you still there with us, by the way? I didn't even ask you.
Hanging on.
Oh,
yes.
There you are. Wonderful. Well, we were just talking about your two books, Dare to Be Prepared and The Cosmic Conspiracy. And I was telling everybody they can get them on the website, StanDeo.com. And I would love everybody to go there and be sure to have these books. I don't have them yet, but I'm going to get them because I know that I've got to do it. I've got to start getting prepared for whatever's coming. And, you know, Stan, I got to tell you, I have friends that keep telling me that we're going to have a pole shift, that the world's coming to an end, the aliens are going to get here and eat us. I mean, there's all these things going on. But you know what? I really don't want to believe it. And I'm wondering if there's any chance that if we all put our minds together and say, you know what, we're just not going to let this all happen, and we create it because we do create our universe. Do you think that's possible to stop all this bad things that are going to happen to us? Or do you think they're predestined?
I don't think they're predestined, but I think we've let it go so long before trying to do anything about it that it's got to run its course. And then we pick up the pieces and start over again. It's just okay. The snowball's at the bottom of the hill at the moment.
Okay, so you think that we weren't thinking about it in the proper, you know, aspect all along, like putting our minds together and saying, hey, we've got to head this off at the pass, and making sure that spiritually we were strong earlier, and that's why this is it's going to have to happen, basically.
Basically, I think that's probably true, but, you know, putting our minds together would have to be a really focused effort in a time when the nations weren't together, and the communication and cultural differences would have prevented everyone getting on the same page. Mm-hmm. It's a natural progress, you know, progression in tribes to have someone take dominance, some tribe bigger than the other tribe, whatever, and try to control the resources for themselves and their people. That drive for control of the resources is what has driven us to this point of warring nations all over the planet, and that coupled with the religious and cultural differences. Mm-hmm. It's hard to just make the common man stop from his daily grind and put his thought to, you know, what we should be doing. I mean, in America, we shouldn't have let it go as far as we have. And my dad and a lot of other people back in the late 50s and early 60s we're warning people, making a strong voice about it in print and you know, in voice, and people sure. just didn't want to stop from their daily fun and activities to listen and do something about it. It wasn't yes. for lack of trying.
Yes, I agree with you on that. You know, it's funny you brought that up about back in the 50s and what have you. I tell the story every once in a while, but back in 1899, in January, on January 30th, my great-grandfather took the family and said, okay, tomorrow we're going to go have a picnic and watch our world end, because they were all told it was going to end at the turn of the century. So they got on their best clothes, and they did their thing. They got a picnic. They drove out to the hills down the country, a little further out than the farm. They all sat there waiting to die. In their best Sunday clothes, and nothing happened, nothing changed, and they all went home and, you know, faced another day. So, you know, this I begin to wonder if this isn't a story that's told from culture to culture, that, you know, there is something coming, there's something bad, and no matter what, we have to accept it, and it's going to happen. And I wonder if you've even taken that into account, that maybe this is just myth and prophecy, and that it will never amount to anything. What would we all do then?
Well, to begin with, a lot of the myth and prophecies are misquoted or misunderstood or mistranslated. The world events at the moment, if you stand back apart from, you know, Islam and apart from Christianity and Judaism, you stand back from that and look at world events, some being caused by mankind, others being caused by the natural aging of our solar system, you can see that we are at a cusp of being probably threatened with annihilation of most of the planet due to these factors coming to a head now. Don't have to be relying on myth or prophecy, you know, as you call them. We can see from current events and threats over the Middle East and from the sun itself misbehaving. We can see that right now, the next 2, 3, 4 years are going to be very traumatic for the entire planet. There's no getting around that, and you don't have to have a Bible or a Quran to tell you that.
Yeah, that's true. I agree with you on it. I keep thinking, oh, I just hope I'm having a bad dream and this is all going to go away, but I don't think so. So, yeah.
Gee, it's tough. You'd be a wet blanket at a fun party, wouldn't you?
Well, you know, I was just visiting a friend for a week up in Oregon, Dr. Richard Allen Miller. He's an amazing guy. And, you know, we were walking across the street and he said, oh, there's this feral cat. And I said, oh, do you take care of her? You know, he goes, feed her. And, you know, we were talking about it. And I looked at him and I said, God, why is it in 2012 all the feral cats in the world aren't fixed? How come we can't feed people? How come we can't clothe them? I said, it all comes down to being born on a planet where you have to start working at the age of 15 just to survive. And there's no way out of it. It's like we're born into a hell planet. What do you think about that?
Well, I've often wondered, looking at the way the food chain works on this planet, why we have to kill lower life forms to survive, and you know, why the strong eat the weak. And I'd like to see a system someday, which the Bible does indicate is coming, where the lamb lays down with the lion and is not consumed, is not frightened of being consumed. So I don't consider this to in its original form, the Earth, to be a hell planet. And in the form that it finishes up in the you know, the next 7 to 10 years or so, I think it will start to be mended by the true creator of life on this planet. It's not you know, rocket science nowadays to understand about DNA and cloning and manipulating structures to make new kinds of plants and animals. So the planet can be returned to a nice golden age in the near future. Begin, it'll take a few years to heal from all the stuff that we put into the environment, but
right.
I don't think it's a hell planet, you know, in the long term. No.
Okay, wonderful. I'm glad to hear that, because right now I feel like it is right now, because it's just ugly out there. It really is. And you know, I can't abide by it. It just upsets me too much. Well anyhow,
we feel the same way. We join you in that.
Yeah. It's really sad. It's extremely depressing when, you know, we have to look at these type of things on a daily basis. And yeah, so hopefully, you know, when the bad stuff happens and we come around the other side of it, it's all going to be good at that point. I really do believe that that can happen. So.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
It'll
so
be
wonderful.
Over.
Well, okay. So you know what? It's that time of the night where I start reading off questions from the chat room. So if everybody would like to do that, you know, folks, I'm not going to take calls tonight because we don't have a whole lot of time left, but just be, just go on into the chat room at freedomslips.com and click on the chat and go in there and type your question in capital letters so that Tones can get them to Stan and I pretty easily. And Stan, do you see the one from Scurvy Spider?
Yes. What a name.
Okay. I'm going to read it off and you can read it along with me. It goes, in the Bible, it says in the old days that there used to be giants. Were they ancient aliens?
The giants, well, yes and no. Satan and those, well, the heavenly beings are, as a general rule, the humanoids that we've seen in ancient documents are slightly taller than we are, maybe 7 foot, something like that, and you know, but basically human. The giants are called the Nephilim in the Hebrew in Genesis 6, are the ones that came from the union of those humanoids we're talking about and Earth women. There was a definite difference in the DNA. And even though it worked and this union brought about these giants, they were not human. They were not alien or, you know, from the heavens. They were a combination of the two, and they were, many of them, just sterile. They could not reproduce. So, yes, there were giants, and they were kind of part alien, but a hybrid. I guess that's the best way I can answer that question. Are you there? Did we lose Lauren?
Oh, dear. Oh, I muted there for a second because I was having a little coughing. Sorry, folks. Yeah, I'm back. Okay. Anyhow, my question to you, since we don't have any more questions right now in chat, you were talking about the last time I heard you talk on somebody else's show, you were talking about cheaper energy, cheaper forms of energy. Are you developing one right now?
I am in the process of doing research on that, yes. I have been for a number of years, and I do have some associates in other cities that are working on various aspects of what we're trying to build. Some of the ways to get new energy are beyond what I could do as an individual or a small group, and those are making thermionic devices which actually capture infrared radiation that passes all the time between atoms. How they exchange energy and why things don't fall apart. But there's a way to trap that and actually physically cool a room, a mass, anything, and get electricity out of the cooling process. Now, that one I'm leaving, you know, to the bigger institutions to deal with, and they've already done it. I've heard the descriptions of it in Teller's group years ago. Mm-hmm. But more simple things that we're looking at are low-tech, but yet not widely used at all at this point. And it's using high-voltage electrostatic wind generators to take the wind, convert it to high voltage, which is then converted to electricity for your household. And the other is, based on the work of Dr. T. Henry Murray, and his work was based on Nikola Tesla's patents, to take energy out of the physical bombardment that is happening all the time of the planet Earth's electromagnetic field and magnetic fields by the solar wind. And from microsecond to microsecond, the sum of those physical impacts of those protons on our magnetopause, our magnetosphere as well, create a pressure that we can convert straight to electricity with a long antenna wire, properly insulated, proper length, et cetera, et cetera. That one I've been working on for some time, and hopefully we'll get time to get it finished and get the information out to people to do their own before it's too late. I can't guarantee it, but I'm going to try.
Very intriguing.
I'm looking at this as low-tech devices because I know that any digital or electronic devices that we normally would build now will be destroyed by EMPs from coronal mass ejections from the sun hitting us or from nuclear war between, you know, countries.
Right.
And you can't store enough spares of everything. I mean, you'd have to buy doubles and triplicates of stuff because you don't know when the next EMP is going to strike and fry your equipment. Okay, go get another one out of the closet or out of the metal cage. When that one's gone, you haven't got any more. So we're looking at how to make basic electricity from such simple devices that an EMP will not bother it at all.
Right, exactly. That's very important, folks. Okay, next question is, this is from Cosmic Love in chat. Is heaven, hell, eternal, or do you think it is possible to visit those realms and come back?
Well, those of us that have had near-death experiences would probably say that it's possible to touch on heaven's gate and maybe even get through it. In some cases, people have gone further and seen what it looks like there. As far as hell, I wouldn't want to visit it and come back. I wouldn't want to visit it at all.
Oh, right. Right, exactly.
Now, and the clues to this, let me say this. The theory of gravitation that I've been writing for 2 or 3 years now that I hope to publish soon, there's a whole new way to look at planets and stars and galaxies. Planets are not meant to be, they form not solid balls, but as shells within shells within shells, and there are voids between these shells. Now, in the Bible, it speaks of hell as a bottomless pit. And if you try to figure out what a bottomless pit is, it solves itself and becomes the inside of a hollow ball.
Mm.
So when you read the prophecies of in the book of Revelation to John, it talks about the beings inside the earth being let loose when a messenger from the heavens comes down and opens the gateway to the underworld, and out they come. The Greeks believed that there was the underworld,
sure.
passed through, and they passed through the river Styx. Now, what many people do not know is that we have not a river, but a whole shell of water underneath the oceans that goes all around the planet in every direction, and it varies in depth from 5 to 15 miles. That shell, if you went through that, you might actually get into the domain that we would call hell.
Very interesting.
Now, you're not,
wow.
It's warm down there, so I don't think that you would be existing in the body we've got now, but in a an electromagnetic body, a spiritual body,
sure.
In the vernacular.
Sure.
So that's what I think.
Well, it's always struck me as it would have to be that type of body, but what I wanted to figure out was how they were keeping us trapped there. And then my brain started racing to Tesla devices. Who knows if they don't come up with something like that in the future, or if that these advanced beings that are here would just come down and say, okay, we're going to put an electromagnetic field around the whole inner Earth's core and put you all in there as, your astral bodies,
What, for hell, you mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, well, I basically agree with what you're saying. This theory I've been developing over the formation of planets and how they age and what happens, part of that theory says that the polar regions of these bodies, planets, moons, suns, these polar regions will periodically thin and even open up to the interior at times and then close rapidly. It's a part of the entropy of the system as it runs down and loses energy. It starts to thin and the outer surface pulls apart as part of the process, and the polar openings occur. And I've even got photographs on the my show images page there, like of the North Pole of Saturn. You can see the dip in it where the pole sinks in. And
mm-hmm.
If you look at the Byrd expedition and the fact that he allegedly said he traveled into a land that was warmer, etc., at the North Pole, and there was a hole there. In essence, what we're saying now. I think that these holes will open up shortly and maybe starting now, because if you open up a thin area at the north and south pole of a planet that's got a hot core, which we do have, then the heat will start to escape and you will see, surprise, surprise, an anomalous melting of the north ice cap and at the south pole as well, at Lake Vostok. The Russians are monitoring that one.
Exactly.
It's getting hot there. And
yep.
hot as Hades. But you see what I'm saying? These possibly entrances and exits. Now, when they speak of the messenger coming from God to open up the doorway to these beings that are trapped in there, open up the hole, a pit on the earth, it might be at one of the poles or both of them that he opens up to let them come out. It doesn't surprise me at all. It just doesn't.
Yeah, that makes total sense. Oh, my gosh. Well, okay, next question. Is Stan open to the Earth expanding theory?
Not only am I open to it, it is a major part of my discussion on the nature of gravity. And if you do go to my website, to you know, to the show images page, which I've given you the link for the chat room, guys, if you go there and click on the Hollow Planets link, it just shows hollow planets, stars, and galaxies, and you click on that, and it'll take you to a whole page worth of animations and images. But not only my stuff, but Neil Adams, the cartoonist, has done some tremendous animations of images from NASA, of, you know, Mars, of various moons, of Saturn, and he's shown where they have expanded and where the continents or the shapes of continents on all these objects used to fit together when the planet or the moon was smaller. And that happened here on Earth. I mean, in the last 30 or 40 years, there have been a number of scientific papers written about the fact that the continents of Earth, if you try to squeeze them together into one landmass, you know, Gondwana land, that they don't fit, that there's like an orange slice gap in between the coastlines. Yet, if you shrink the planet down 25%, just 25%, all of that curvature disappears, and the continents of all of the continents, they all fit together into one landmass. It happens not only here, but on the moon, but on Mars, and you can see it by going to my website and clicking on Neil Adams' animations. Now, he has a slightly different idea about what causes the expanding Earth and, you know, hollow Earth and that kind of stuff, but we arrive at the same conclusion from the visual information we're getting out of astronomers and out of NASA and, you know, JPL. Yeah. So I do support the expanding Earth theory, and it's like when a ballerina is spinning around, you know, pirouette, and her arms are in close, and she's spinning like crazy, and opens her arms out, spreads them out, and she slows down. It's exactly the same as, look at a glass of water, you stir it, and you've got, you know, sand particles or something in it. When you stir it up, the sand particles get spread all over, you know, inside the glass and the water that's spinning. But as it slows down, that funnel of air that goes down to the bottom of your glass starts to decrease in size. And as it does, all of the little particles out there start to collect at the very center and bottom of that vortex, you know, at the bottom of the glass. And the tip of that vortex starts to bounce up and down very slowly until it's completely gone. And it's aging. And things are being, you know, thrown out and curved around to the, you know, the particles are curving around to the base of that vortex. So the Earth is aging. It's like the old ballerina. And the sun is aging. And it's going to expand. It is expanding.
Mm-hmm.
They all
very interesting. Okay, next question, Stan. I'm going to fire them at you. Where is the God, the lowercase God of the Old Testament now? Is he an actor in all this?
No, not an actor, but completely in control. And I believe, as many of us who study this from a scientific point of view, that we have parallel or concentric universes, and that God's dwelling, the God of the Bible, is in a level one or two levels above us in energy density in a parallel universe, or concentric, because we think it's around the spherical gravitational bodies that you have gateways to the various dimensions, if you wish, or various universes, which is an interesting point about the Tower of Babel, you being a gateway. But anyway, that's God is not an actor. He's in charge. He's behind the scenes. And all of this will come to a head and finish in our lifetime if we live another 10, 15 years.
Interesting. Okay, and here's the last question we have for the day. It's from Lady Aquafia, and it says, ask Lorraine to ask Stan on his take of the Keshe Foundation, Keshe, K-E-S-H-E, Foundation.
You know, I don't know. I've never heard of it.
Oh, so, okay. Wonderful. Okay.
Have you heard of it at all, or?
No. Well, actually, I have. I've been to the website. It was a while back, and to be honest with you, I don't remember what it's all about. The M.T. Keshe Foundation.
Hey,
I don't know.
Can we expand on that Tower of Babel thing for a minute?
Is that all right? Sure. Yeah, go right ahead. We got 3 minutes left in the show.
Oh,
let's do it.
Okay, quickly. On that show images page, second row down, there's a Tower of Babel Marduk Stela. Which is, of course, something in the time of Marduk the Great. He had this commissioned, and it's a floor plan for a ziggurat, which is the gateway to the gods. Now, in the ancient languages in the Middle East, Bab El, Babel, means Bab, gateway or doorway, and El is God. So God, doorway, is the Tower of Babel. And when they say that Nimrod was building this tower to reach up to the heavens, it wasn't an ordinary tower. It was high because you have to have some clearance between the top of it and the bottom where the dirt is because of the voltage levels and the heat that develops when you open a portal to the parallel universes going upward in energy density. As you go down, like we're talking about toward hell, the energy density is less, so it's cooler. But in this case, the tower that Nimrod was trying to build had more to it than just bricks and mortar. And the top room, as you'll see in the stela that I've got there, the picture of it, there's a kind of a round doorway, which is like, the Stargate series. It's a portal that they come through, but they have to come through it at certain altitudes, before and let their charge dissipate before they step foot on the Earth itself without, causing, electric shock and whatever to things around them.
Oh, now that's intriguing. So it's basically a giant, grounding rod.
Well, in essence, but, you can store up a lot of energy in a body, compressing the atoms and, make them spin faster and then decreasing their diameter when they do that, because you're adding the energy into them. And when you do that and then drop that body into a lower energy density universe like ours, it has got to throw off a lot of that energy rapidly to keep sorting out people we talk to. Okay, I guess that's it.
Oh, my God, Stan, it's the end of the show. This happened so quickly. Well, thank you for being with us, Stan Deo. It was my great honor to have you on the show tonight. Thank you, everybody. We'll see you next week. Take care.
Revolution. Revolution. Radio.
You don't see it, do you? How close we are to absolute chaos. The sick ones are sitting on their fat asses eating and drinking themselves into a stupor, polluting the world without a second thought while it goes down the toilet. Nobody wants to do the nasty work. You know, the shit that we all just think about. Most good citizens are just along for the ride and then bitch and moan and complain about everything when it doesn't work out. Not me. Get it done.
Revolution Radio, where we do the nasty work. www.freedomslips.com